Great. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome to our February call. If you're new to the call, we have a pretty standard formula. What's going to happen is in just a moment, I'm going to be introducing our speaker, who we're excited to have today. We'll get some updates of what's happened since last month's call. Certainly, I'm sure most of you noticed that something called the Climate Leadership Council was announced this week, something that's very interesting to us, some exciting things they're doing. So we'll update you about what we know about that initiative. We'll go over what we're doing and get into action and then talk about our practice exercise. So, you know, it's interesting. So we've been doing this call for over 9 years. And in a certain sense, you could say that the whole point of what we've been doing is to get to renewable energy faster. And yet, you know, of all the speakers we've had, all the economists, all the scientists, all the messaging people, you know, there's a woman from Brookings next month, Deborah Shisaha, whose area of expertise is decoupling, which shows that there's no evidence that it's the environment or the economy. That you can't find any data out in the world that says those two are at odds with each other. But it is funny to me that we've been doing the call every month for 9 years, and I don't think we've ever had somebody whose area of expertise is renewable energy. So we're particularly pleased to have someone who's not their area of expertise today. I also want to say something about our speaker, Sandy Reiske. So Sandy does have a foundation called Generation 180, which I hope he gets into, but he also has a lot of expertise in actually being successful in renewables. So he's the chairman and chief strategy officer for Apex Clean Energy, which has been responsible for over $4 billion in wind and solar facilities. This is an area where he has street credit. This isn't conceptual work. This is actually someone who's making it happen out there in the field. And Sandy, that's one of the things that I want to tell you about the people you're talking to. You're probably never going to talk to anybody who's going to do more about this than the people that you're speaking with. So these people are going to get into action. This isn't going to be some theoretical discussion of, oh, isn't this interesting? These are people who are going to go make something happen. So let me just tell you a little bit of what they did in January alone. So just in the month of January, the people you're talking to published 274 letters to the editor, 34 op-eds, 11 editorials, had 37 meetings with members of Congress, conducted 158 outreach events where they went out and spoke to the public, had 1,926 personal letters sent to members of Congress, and received 127 endorsements from leaders like municipalities or people who lead in the community. So the people that you're talking to are people who will get into action and make something happen this month. Let me just say to all of you who are out there, you know, one of the things that we knew going into the end of the year is that we had three Republican offices who had told us that they planned on introducing something very close or, in fact, our proposed legislation. We have not been able to reconfirm if that's the case with those three particular offices, and we believe that they were highly motivated by wanting to replace the Clean Power Plan with a market-based alternative. We continue to get a lot of outreach to Republican offices to us about our proposed text, what we want to do. So we still feel very, very good about Republicans. We're just uncertain about those particular three. That being said, one of the things I want you to know the staff works on every single week is making sure that everything is in place so that the minute legislation is introduced, we're prepared to deal with it on a press basis. You know, many of you have signed up for our text reminders that we can quickly put in place everything we need to put in place that when a bill's introduced, it can actually be passed. Okay, great. So again, we're very, very happy that Sandy Reiske is here and that we can actually have a speaker on the area of renewables, something we want to get to quickly. After his opening comments, we'll open up the questions in the chat that Ricky will pick up and feed back to us. So Sandy, welcome and thank you so much for making yourself available today.
Thank you so much. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here with you all. This is a real privilege. I've always felt that the Citizens Climate Lobby has been directly out there fighting for a very, very important act that is going to move the needle. This is one of the big ones. You get a lot of leverage, and I know that's why you're all looking at it and working so hard. So I'm absolutely thrilled. How do I get the PowerPoint up so everybody can see that?
Hey, Sandy, so you would hit, share screen.
Okay, where's that?
It's in the lower left, very lower. Oh, actually, you know what? Hang on. Hang on 1 second.
And also, Sandy, if you could get a little closer to the microphone, you're a little bit soft. Okay, thank you.
Now, do you see a share screen option at the bottom, Sandy?
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
Just jump right into a presentation here. I just want to give you some quick background on who Apex Clean Energy is and what I've been doing in the industry. I got in the business about 17 years ago. Apex is developing and building and owning wind energy facilities all around the country. We launched in 2009, and just in 2015, we got to the point where we actually installed more wind power than any other company in the US, including NextEra. So we're not the biggest wind energy company, but we were the most active, and we have the largest pipeline in the country. And so Apex is out there, installing a lot of clean energy. And after 8 years of being there, when we hit the point where we energy, we were top of our game there. I decided I was going to move to position of chairman of the company and to launch this this nonprofit that I want to tell you about called Generation 180. So we want to support a cultural shift in energy behavior and awareness and clean energy adoption. We want to do that by creating original content. And ultimately, we want to change behavior of consumers around energy, because we think it's a huge lever. It's a great way to help decarbonize at scale and at low cost, and we believe relatively quickly. So when I say a cultural shift, I think of recycling or seatbelt laws and people changing their behavior, or even the concept of local foods. And I think energy is ready to, and really near a tipping point, to be able to do the same thing, where we have the opportunity with solar panels to really go local with energy in a way that's really revolutionary in many, many ways. In order to help define what I mean by the opportunity for decarbonization, if you just take three categories of relatively new technologies that are now basically affordable, which would be electric cars and solar panels and LED lights, if we were to achieve 100% market share, there's an opportunity there to decarbonize or lower carbon emissions at about 21%. So 50% market penetration would be about 10%. If we hit 25% market penetration, that would be about 5% reduction in overall carbon emissions. May not sound like much, but let me tell you, all the work we've done in the wind and solar industry, we've only reduced carbon emissions by about 3% so far. And that's 10% of electricity emissions, but only 3% of overall emissions.
Hey, Sandy. This is Ricky. I'm sorry. If you would just get a little bit closer to the mic, or maybe speak a little bit louder. Still having notes a little bit low for folks.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Okay. So we think that it's really a worthwhile goal and can really move the needle in a big way. And I guess, one of the questions we often get is, well, changing consumer behavior is tough, and lots of people have been trying it for a long time. And I think the work that's been done in that direction has not been lost. It's all been building to a point where people are ready to think about energy in a different way, or even think about energy at all. But we think energy awareness is an idea whose time has come because of new things that are happening. The first is local energy, like I was talking about. We have big companies marketing solar and electric cars or LED lights, all of these things that are coming at consumers, and they're going to be making choices about energy for the first time. We have the big social momentum of the Paris Agreement and carbon, to move away from fossil fuels. And we have the energy transition. And this is the thing that, when I was in the business all these years, it always was very frustrating that nobody seemed to understand how much progress we were making on the industrial scale energy generation as far as clean generation. So we'll talk some about that. But these three mega trends are what I believe set the stage for a real change in behavior in how we deal with energy, how we're energy aware. So what we're really trying to do here, and this is kind of exciting, if you imagine that, you know, this is just conceptual, but if you imagine that energy consumption is going up over time, and that clean energy adoption at some point might meet the point of all the consumption, we would be at 100% clean energy. And in a business as usual scenario, that might be 50 years away. But if we get more energy efficiency, so if we bend the curve down, the blue curve down, and we have less energy waste, while at the same time accelerating clean energy adoption, then we have the ability to potentially move forward to the point that clean energy adoption, 100% clean energy adoption, could be much sooner. In this example, perhaps 25 years versus 50. So this is an exercise, you know, this is what we say in the office, we're trying to bend the curves. What is our message? You know, here you see a lot of nonprofit organizations that are delivering all kinds of messages, very important messages. So we're going to try to do something different. We're going to be focusing on individual empowerment, where we're emphasizing solutions that work for a new energy lifestyle. So we're not going to be talking about climate change or science or fires or floods or droughts, or asking people to demonstrate or write their congressman. This is really about personal behavior. So we're going right to the individual. So we think it's time for a new energy narrative where the old script, I think, is, you know, that energy is an area that's very hard to change, that we're very dependent on fossil fuels. The problem is very big. The future's grim. There's a lot of myths about clean energy. And even, you know, sort of 5 years ago, the only way you could really change things was contacting your congressman or demonstrating or that type of thing, which a lot of people just don't have time for. So we believe that there's a new narrative possible here that talks about how much progress we're making, that points to all the trends that I mentioned before, and leads people to the point where they can say, boy, my choices really do matter. I can be a part of the solution. You know, these I'm learning about new products that are going to save me money, and I'm a believer, I'm hopeful, more confident, this type of thing. So I'd like to show you briefly, let's see, how do I share screens, move out of this screen to the, is there a way to get back to the share screens?
Yeah, so you want to stop your share, what are you currently doing, up to the, it should be a little more at the top, it should have a red button that says stop share.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then what you want to do is you want to share screen again and pick the new source that you want to share.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to turn this way up because I know you guys are having a hard time hearing me. I hope it doesn't blast you. Here we go.
I've served my country. I've had tours in the Middle East. I was lucky enough to make it back to my family. Today, we're making decisions for a better future. With our solar panels, we generate more electricity than we use, saving us money every month. With our electric car, we drive on the energy that we make at home. I never stop at gas stations anymore. We pay such a high price for energy. It's crazy. The wars we fight, the dependence on foreign countries, and the pollution. But now we have better choices. This is how I serve my country now. Self-reliance is my answer for energy security. I'm proud to be working in the solar industry. Solar means more jobs for America. Solar saves people money. Solar means more energy security. Solar means freedom, liberty, and independence. This is how my generation will leave the world a better place for our kids.
Great, let's see. back to this. So that was an example of the type of content that we're producing, and it's designed to be something you could have at the Super Bowl, you know, an advertisement at the Super Bowl or that type of thing. We're sharing it on social media, and so that gives you a sense of what we're up to. We have a document we call the Manifesto or the New Energy Story, really making the case that I've just made that electric cars are better and they save you money. Solar's local, you know, it's like local food. It makes us more self-reliant. It reduces pollution and it's healthier. So we have a lot of great messaging there. And then the idea, of course, that energy is now democratic in a way that it never has been before. There's only a few more slides here. We're turning to clean energy. This slide is really making the case that it's already happening. There are already a million solar roofs around the country. People aren't aware really of the success of electric cars. Generally, many people don't even know that there's an American electric car company, Tesla. But also the larger social context here, you know, every major cultural shift has been accompanied by a very strong moral underpinning. And, you know, most of the major religions have made very large statements, strong statements, supporting moving away from fossil fuels. Of course, the Paris Agreement is a huge step for the whole world and a big marker, milestone. And the quote that I find very, very compelling is just that, from Victor Hugo, you know, you can resist an invading army, but you cannot resist an idea whose time has come. And I think a carbon tax fits in that bucket. And I think generally energy awareness and clean energy fit in those buckets. And here's why. This is what I think so many people don't realize. The trend globally on the left-hand side, solar and wind energy have been growing like crazy. This is utility scale solar and wind. Last year added 118 gigawatts of new power globally, where coal and natural gas have been falling for the past, that's 6 years, right? So that's great news. People should take a lot of solace in this, that their decisions are being supported by generally society is going in this direction already. And that kind of gives people permission to understand that clean energy is something they should be thinking about and doing as well. In 2015, and I think most people aren't aware, in the US, we have about 70% of the new capacity coming online. It's just like the global trends, it's clean energy. If you look at the sort of jobs in the economy question, the growth has been very consistent for solar and wind, and it's been sort of exponential. And we had a terrific announcement, I'm sure many of you already heard it, that the jobs in this country now in solar and wind are orders of magnitude larger than what's in the fossil fuel sector. So you can see that on the bottom right-hand side. So the idea that there's some disconnection between jobs and the economy and somehow going green is actually couldn't be further from the truth. This is where the jobs are. This is where the jobs are going to be for decades. So just wanted to point out, even we just heard yesterday or the day before, there's a new milestone for wind energy. So this is a graph of wind energy in the US, very strong growth. Wind power is now has more capacity installed than hydropower in the US. It's not kilowatt hours delivered, but it is nameplate capacity. And that's a great great milestone for the industry. Solar power, also huge growth. You can see the cost curve, the black line coming down, and how quickly, much faster actually than wind, that solar power has been coming online, with 2016 really off the charts there for the most recent data. So very, very excited. Of course, everybody knows that this is a great thing to do from the standpoint of our health, right? It's the right direction. And I love surprising people with data, but, you know, most people don't realize that about half of our water withdrawals in this country are for power plants that are fossil or for processed water.
So, you know, water and air benefits, air quality benefits are huge. Another nugget, so the takeaway on this slide is, of course, we don't need the fossil fuel cycle if we're in a place where we're using only wind and solar. And what's happened is we're replacing fuel with innovation, right? There's just like Kodak. Remember film, Kodak film? Now you're using your phone, right? There, that whole physical, that whole industry is now moved to into an innovative space. So the very last slide here, and thanks again for your patience, is just the idea that it's a call to action. You know, here are the things we can all do in our lives that are going to make a difference and move the needle. And so spreading this idea, the faster it spreads, of course, the faster we're going to be able to decarbonize. And with that, I just want to mention we have launched a campaign that's kind of like the poster child of energy waste, which is the retail stores that leave their doors open in the summertime and all the air conditioning coming out. So that's something that's been bothering me for years. And so we have a campaign. If you want to visit our website, you can see a neat video there about how you can use Facebook Messenger. And I'll just show you. You send us a pin and it drops on the place where the retailer is, and red are offenders and green are good companies that are closing their doors, and we contact the retailer for you. And so it's a cool way using social media to help people tell retail stores that they want to close, they want people to close the doors, and they don't have to confront the store manager or anything like that. We're signing up retailers now and getting ready to launch officially this summer. So that's our big campaign. We did it last year in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I'm based, and it worked very well. You're looking at the Charlottesville map, and people got very excited, and we think this is exciting. So, look, thanks so much for letting me speak with so many of you. I'm thrilled to have done so, and I'm ready to take any questions.
Great. So, Sandy, I just love that last little piece, too, of, you know, we all have our pet peeves like that, right? Like, one of the things that drives me crazy, if you're in the hotel and they say, if you hang your towels up, we won't wash them, and then they wash them. And you're like, you know, don't wash them, please, you know. So it's so great that we have an avenue to actually get people to keep their doors shut. I think we do have time for a couple of questions. There were a lot of questions that came in advance in the area of how is the improvement in battery storage and smart grid technology coming along. So given that came in a lot, could you just say something about that, and we'll see if we have time for a question in the chat also.
I'd love to. It's not my area of expertise, but I listened to a podcast called The Energy Gang, and battery storage has gotten cheaper and cheaper over time and continues to. And let's see, what is the take home here? The biggest wins from a carbon standpoint are when you shift very heavy trucks and buses to batteries. So when you're talking from an EV standpoint, it's great to have all consumers moving towards EVs, but getting your rallying and your communities to switch buses to EVs actually is a huge cost savings for them, and also emissions. So the smart grid, the rollout of that technology is very much of a regional thing. And there are certain areas of the country that have made great advancements, and I would say proven the technology from a lot of different angles. There's everything from I have a water heater, and the utility can sort of take control of it and charge it up when it has extra energy, and then not use it in the middle of the day when it needs. But honestly, this is it's not an area that I have a lot of expertise, so I should probably look for the next question.
Okay, great. Let me just say, I'll ask Ricky to pick something from the chat, but one of the questions that's come in is if your PowerPoint is something that the people on this call could have access to.
Yes, I thought it was being recorded, but you can definitely, we will put it up, we'll send it to you to put on your website.
Okay, great, awesome. We'll put it on community, everybody. Ricky, you want to pick something from the chat, Ricky?
Yes, hey Mark, one question in here regarding large regional utilities versus local co-ops, and I think we're talking about with energy and utility services, and do you think that these sort of small co-ops are the right approach to push utilities to get greener?
Boy, I'm not sure of the question. What type of approach to get utilities to go greener?
Let's see. In Bainbridge, Washington, they have an initiative on the island to remove our utility service from a large regional utility to a local co-op. And you think these sorts of small co-ops are the right approach? Is it better to push utilities to get greener?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, we all have probably heard about in Colorado, there were some cities, maybe it was Vail, that became its own municipal utility and stepped out of being a part of the larger utility. I think it was Xcel. And I think that's all part of local initiatives where people realize they have options to install different types of generation, whether it's utility scale or community scale. So community scale solar is a growing trend. And I think co-ops are the perfect place to implement that type of thing.
Great. Okay. Well, listen, Sandy, thank you so much. You've hit some themes that we think have such a chance of success with people we need to reach: innovation, patriotism, freedom. We all think those are winning themes. And so to be able to, you know, house this inside of that, as I said at the start of the call, gives our people material that they will go to work with. So thank you very much. You're welcome to stay on for the call. It has another 10 or 15 minutes of business, and you're certainly welcome to stay on for that if you like. But on a Saturday, thank you, particularly going for the office so the sound quality is better. We really, really appreciate it, and we're really grateful for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much. And I'm just going to mention there's a movie, Merchants of Doubt. To the extent your audience has not yet seen it, it's a great way to understand a lot of the forces we're up against. Another is Elon Musk that he said, you know, we don't tax vegetables the way we tax alcohol and cigarettes. And I think that's particularly good. The way when I think of a carbon tax, it applies. So,
okay. Well, then one last thing for you. One of the comments I loved in the chat is one of the people said, "I'm for anybody who quotes Victor Hugo." Okay, good. We're going to have a couple of our staffers come on for a second. First of all, I want Dr. Richter and then Ricky Bradley. So Dr. Richter is going to talk to us a little bit about the big announcement from the Climate Leadership Council today. I imagine most of you are tracking that. You know, what do we know about this organization? What are they trying to do? Where is that consistent with what we're trying to do? And who are some of the players? So, Danny, are you there?
I'm here, Mark.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, in the 2 minutes I have, I'd like to convey four main points about the policy described in the Conservative Case for Carbon Dividends, which was released last Wednesday. First, who the authors are. Second, what their proposal is. Three, where it differs from carbon fee and dividend, and four, why this is fantastic. First, the authors. Most importantly, all have impeccable conservative credentials. They include two former secretaries of state, three former secretaries of the Treasury, two former chairmen of the President's Council of Economic Advisors, a former chairman of the board of Walmart, and a venture capitalist. Further, there are only two Americans in the past 100 years who have served as both Secretary of State and Secretary of Treasury, and they are both authors on this paper. Second, the proposal is for an upstream fee on the carbon content of fossil fuels starting at $40 per ton, increasing at 2% above inflation per year. 100% of the revenue would be returned equally to Americans in quarterly carbon dividends. A border adjustment would be included, and the proposal would phase out Obama-era regulations related to CO2, including full repeal of the Clean Power Plan. Despite this, the authors estimate emissions reductions nearly two times what all Obama-era regulations would achieve, and nearly three times what we can reasonably expect to get with the current political circumstances. Now, CCL's policy differs in several important ways. First of all, our policy includes no regulatory rollback. It would start lower but achieve greater emissions reductions because of a more aggressive rate of increase. It would keep border adjustment funds separate from the dividends to maximize likelihood of W2O compliance and return dividends monthly instead of quarterly with a limit of 2 half shares per child per household. Though this is not our policy and we like our policy better, it is still something to be very excited about. Some of the most distinguished Americans alive today, aligned with either political party, have entered the political fray saying carbon taxes and carbon dividends are the way to go. With their voices in the national discussion, the best first step to addressing global warming is closer.
Great, Danny. Thank you for being so concise with that. And I think that's useful for every single one of us on the call. Okay, I want to transition over to Ricky Bradley for just a second. So, you know, most of you who are on the call now probably know Ricky as, you know, the guy who always hosts this call. But, you know, Ricky was a volunteer in Texas who saw when he first came on that we needed a lot of more infrastructure on the information side. So Ricky actually was the inventor and creator of CCL University and CCL Community. So he did both those as a volunteer. And we thought that was just too much out of control innovation, so we hired him to see if we could slow him down a little bit. But one of the things that Ricky's got a new tool that he wants to show you that helps with the lobbying. One of the things we're always trying to do is do everything we can on the infrastructure side to make lobbying easier. So for instance, we've now automated the process for updating the bios. So you're going to be able to get updated bios that are done automatically now, so it's not so labor intensive. You know, we know that it always comes down to anytime you're meeting with people is inherently risky. So anything we can do to reduce that risk, to give you a better chance of connecting with a person because of the resources we're going to do, we're going to continue to work on. And this is another tool that Ricky's now added that's available for us for lobbying. So Ricky, can you tell us where we find this and what people have now?
Yeah, thank you, Mark. So are you able to see my screen right now?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, this is a tool that Danny and I, mostly Danny, I'll just have to say, worked on.
Okay.
But it is leveraging the data that we captured from our June lobby meetings. And it's in direct response to Danny's review of all the meeting minutes to find out, you know, what are the most frequently raised topics we're hearing from our congressional offices. And then to take it one step further and to say, okay, if that's what we're hearing most frequently, where are all the resources that we have to address those concerns? And so if you're on CCL Community, and this is the CCL Community page here for resources. So if you were to log into CCL Community, click the resources navigation menu right here at the top. What you'll see on the left-hand side is a bunch of different subtopics or submenus. You'll select the lobbying one, and then you'll scroll down because we have a ton of lobbying resources. You'll scroll down into the resources that are particularly important for before a meeting. And it's the very first bullet point. And it says the most frequently raised topics and the responses to them, right? So we've really made it cryptic as far as what this is. But once you click on that, the page that will result, what you'll see is a bunch of different options here for each topic that was raised. It will show you the frequency of the topic was raised and what percentage of offices. So in 32% of our offices, the Climate Solutions Caucus was mentioned. Now we realize that one was mostly because of what we were bringing to them, but the rest of these are really the most important topics that were raised by members of Congress. And all you need to do to find the resources to address those is click on the title or the little plus sign next to them. And you'll have links to all the different resources that are available. So if someone wants to talk about the impact on low-income households, you'd click that, open up the spoiler, and you'd have links to laser talks, maybe the household impact study, any REMI reports dealing with that. All the way down, as you can see, this goes on for quite a while. So lots of good information there. Hopefully this will be really beneficial for folks as they get ready and prepare for their in-district meetings this spring. Thanks so much.
Great. Ricky, Danny, thank you both for that. And I hope that that makes your lobbying efforts a lot easier for everybody for both Spring Lobby Drive and for the June conference. I want to say one thing about Spring Lobby Drive. One of the things you'll notice in a couple minutes, I'm going to get to the actions for the U.S. and Canada. I didn't put anything in there about the Spring Lobby Drive because I'm assuming everybody's got your requests in, you're working to make the appointments happen. And I want to really emphasize how crucial that is this spring. There are a lot of people, more than probably ever have, asking to meet with their representatives, and that's a great thing, and it's really important. Remember this, though. Your office wants to meet with you. We've all been in those meetings where they've said, we wish everybody acted like you. So there's going to be a lot of people bombarding them, and that's a good thing because we want citizens reaching out to their people. But as a gift to the office during the spring lobby drive, make sure you get an appointment, because in some cases they're going to need a breath of fresh air, and you going in to provide that is going to be really important. So please make sure you get that appointment and go in and do CCL the way the CCL way. Sometimes our members of Congress and their staff need a little bit of wind in their sails also, and we know we can provide that. I want to just say something about Canada real quick. Canada is on fire. Of the 11 editorials that were published this month, 10 of them were from Canada, and just last week, one from the left and the right in newspapers in Canada. There's just something really fantastic happening up there right now. Congratulations to all of you in Canada. Also want to say something about our 2016 Presenters Challenge. So last year, CCLers made 1,158 presentations to the public. That was up from 511 the year before. And many of you know we had a challenge. If you were in the top five, you got pre-registration for the conference this year. So Dan Dietrich had 28, Eve Stevens 25, Dick Smith 22, Sharon Ripner 19, and Alan Anderson 18. So all of you, congratulations, you get your conference registration free. The 2017 challenge has to do with not only delivering the appointments, I mean the outreach events, but also scheduling them, because some people are good at scheduling them, some people are good at leading them. So if you schedule 10 or more between now and May 21st, you get a pack of CCL thank you cards and the bumper sticker. Woo-hoo! And lunch with Natalie Lynn at the DC conference in June. If you're one of the top five schedulers or presenters, you also get free registration for the 2018 conference. So we're excited about that. Okay, I want to talk about Canadian and U.S. actions and then give you a quick update on the Climate Solutions Caucus. Okay, so in Canada, one of the things I love about the Canadian actions is they're sent to us every month and they're written in Canadian. So the first Canadian action is to consider joining CCL community. So I love that, consider. So Canada, thank you for being Canada and listing your actions that way. The second action is, in case you don't know, at the very end of the Obama administration, the Treasury Department issued a report that validates much of what we've been saying about a revenue-neutral carbon tax. And so now there's support from Treasury Department in Canada. We're asking you to get that out to your MPs. Okay, in the U.S., we're going to ask you to write your members, reach out to your members, ask them to join the Climate Solutions Caucus, which I'll give you an update on in just a moment. Start planning your media and outreach events for Earth Day. So we've had a huge outreach that's been happening since November, and Earth Day is probably our biggest opportunity. Generally, it's our biggest opportunity every year. So let's make sure we're thinking ahead, planning where we're going to be, if we're having booths, how we're going to get a lot of media. Every year, it's our biggest opportunity to get op-eds published. So let's start doing the preparation on that now. And then please use the exercise to practice. You know, every month we either have a laser talk or a role play. The role play this month has to do with reaching out to Trump supporters. And, you know, we're doing a good job of building the conservative base of our organization, but we need, the House is controlled by Republicans, the Senate is controlled by Republicans. The more conservatives, the more Republicans we have. And one of the good things to know about that is the most recent Yale research study says that 61% of Trump supporters support regulation or a market-based solution to deal with global warming, and 31% want both. So there's a lot of more enthusiasm than people anticipate from Trump supporters for action on climate change. Okay, last thing, how are we doing on the Climate Solutions Caucus? We're up to 24 people now. So the Republican additions are Dave Reichert from Washington, Don Bacon from Nebraska. That's really important because that's a non-coastal area. The Nebraska one is particularly important. On the Democratic side, we added Earl Blumenauer of Oregon and Charlie Crist of Florida. So four more additions just in the last few days. That now means we represent 14 states. The two new states are Nebraska and Washington. Six new Republicans have joined since the November 8th election, five of them in 2017. The caucus is now larger than it has ever been at every time in history, and it celebrated its first anniversary on February 1st. So that's part of the reason we also have listed that we want everybody to continue to reach out and build this caucus. It's really important in rapidly getting us to a solution. Okay, as I said earlier, our speaker for next month is Debra Shi Saha from the Brookings Institute. Her area of expertise is in decoupling. That is, her research shows that you can't say that when we try and do some good things about the environment, it hurts the economy. There's just no data to back that up. All right, Ricky, I'm going to ask you to unmute the line. Shout out to Sandy. That'd be great. Thanks a lot, Sandy. Appreciate you being on the call today.
We should do what we always do, which is go around and just quickly introduce ourselves. We'll start with
camera on our
is there pizza coming?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. Yeah. All right.